Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 75 of season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to finish off this week is Aaron Neuwirth from Out Now with Aaron and Abe. Welcome back to the show.
Come out to New York, have a good time, record a podcast.
I'm a little further than New York, but yeah.
we're in New York together for this.
Oh, that we are. That definitely, that's true. And we're jumping all around New York, going across all these bridges and FDR drives and all those things. So yeah, okay. I think you're right.
Okay.
Minute 75 begins with Connie enlightening Cobb and ends with Simon realizing something. You know, we finished things off yesterday with John giving some information to Cobb, who takes it all at face value, which is pretty interesting, the way that he does it. Mm-hmm. You know, he was able to take the information about the fact that it was a heist, and he didn't do it much about it, and the fact that he wants to you know, to try and stop these dump trucks that are on the FDR. And basically, Cobb ended yesterday's minute by saying that, we need something about dump trucks on the FDR drive. And Connie just jumps in, you know, and she goes, Walter, they don't allow dump trucks on the FDR. So,
In a very you should know this kind of attitude, like, Walter, they don't allow trucks on the FDR. It's like, there's such a, like, you know this, dummy. What are you talking about?
That's right.
And then his immediate, like, Connie, just his reaction back to her. It's like, this is not the time for the logic.
That's right. And we mentioned it a little bit earlier this week when I was talking about the FDR drive itself, about that, you know, that cars over a certain weight are not allowed on the FDR drive. But I went a little deeper into it about the, you know, dump trucks and stuff like that. So, you know, what I found was is that in real life, not only are dump trucks prohibited from being on the FDR, but they also wouldn't be able to drive there because there were low tunnel ceilings, meaning that if they were there, they would have gotten stuck.
Yeah, it's a more prohibitive to make sure they get the idea. No, you can't do this.
Yes, that's right. Which again, you know, shows that you know, how is it that they actually were on the FDR drive? that's my question then. You know, do you think this was filmed on location in New York, most of it?
Yes.
Exactly. So how did they film dump trucks on the FDR drive, which are not allowed to be on the FDR drive?
Movie magic is the answer to that question.
Ah, okay. That's actually pretty good. I didn't even think about that fact. Movie magic. I was thinking other things, but yeah, that works. That works. at this point, they're scrambling all around, trying to figure things out, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, and we get a little bit more knowledge of what, you know, Cobb and all his men are doing. I mean, you have all these cops around the school. They have a bunch of cops with dogs that are coming into the school. You know, do you think that a dog can sniff out this these two chemicals? Do you think that's what it is? Or are they assuming that maybe there's something else?
I don't think you can afford to not take into consideration the utilities you have at your disposal, which includes, you know, bomb sniffing dogs or what have you, whether or not they can sniff out the chemicals or just something that seems amiss within a school setting. You know, that's the job, right? And what other options do they have as far as finding things that are out of the ordinary?
Sure. Okay. That's fair. I mean, I like the fact that they make this seem very, very busy.
Yeah.
You know, we see a lot of people running around doing things and stuff like that, which shows us that not only are they taking this seriously, but they need such a large number of manpower to take care of this type of thing.
Yeah, it's It looks like the thing that's happening is actually happening, which is something that I think you can give a lot of credit to movies of this time for, when they could spend on extras and sets and locations and things that would, you know, convey a space that makes, that's grounded in real world. If there's something that I see a lack of in a lot of modern movies, especially ones that are set in the real world, it's they feel empty. There's a lot of just city streets where nobody walks on them, you know, restaurants with nobody in them, areas where people would normally be occupying doing busy work that just don't have those things. There's a sharp change in that in movies, specifically like bigger budget movies of today compared to movies like in the 90s where and before that, where you just have this kind of sense of lived in that feels more apparent. Especially when it comes to like these big action movies that have the budgets to afford having, you know, a bunch of extras in the background doing stuff or what have you to just convey a certain kind of reality that visual effects can knock out nowadays, but to lessening effect.
But so what would be your explanation? What would you think that they aren't populating things well enough then?
A variety of things.
If they have the technology to do it.
A variety of things. Cost is one of them. A shift in why movies are being made to begin with, as far as what kind of effort is being put in on the filmmaker's part, whether it's driven by, a desire to make this specific movie or a desire just to make a movie or a desire to fulfill a need for a studio to complete something. There's just less emphasis on the personal of it all, where Johnny Tiernan is yes, he makes big budget action movies for a large part of his career, but he was a theater guy. He's a guy that has a lot of know-how as far as what it means to make a scene look the way it does. He very much thinks things in his head. He's very much a storyboard driven kind of guy as far as understanding a shot and what it's supposed to look like. And he has a sense of that. I think there's directors of today that would love to have the resources to pull hundreds of extras together and have things in the backgrounds and offices that look like real offices and stuff like that. But they just don't always have that availability at that point. And there's also just a lot of things to be made at one time. There's not always just people available to do certain things.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. But again, you would think that, you know, if they have the funds for CGI and for the special effects and stuff like that, it might, you know, do you think it's cheaper to do CGI than to actually get extras, roaming around the back of a scene?
Depends on what we're talking about. You know, if you have wide shots and for some reason you need CGI people to be walking around, that probably costs less than having, a two shot with people in the background that are entirely made up. And we've seen this. We've seen this now with like the way Disney's using like AI technology to have like non-real people in crowds, and then they get screenshotted and highlighted on Twitter and stuff because they look ridiculous. I mean, so it's just not seamless. That's the other problem. It stands out because you have like random fake extras wailing their arms around or having, you know, dislocated jaws, and it's like, this isn't working, guys. Like, we need to like really do this.
That's my point. If they know that that's what they're doing and that it's not as effective, so doesn't it make more sense then that they should spend the money to hire extras?
I mean, that's the thing to realize, that that's the ideal. For all the good ideas that Hollywood can have, there's plenty of bad ones that they will run into the ground before they realize they should change their ways. So
right. Okay. That makes sense.
We have this thing. We should use it all the time. We have a volume. We should keep using the volume. Now everyone complains about the volume. I mean, that's how it goes.
Good point. And at this point, you know, the Connie then, you know, we mentioned before that Cobb yells at Connie and goes, Connie, she says, all right, you don't want I should argue. I won't argue no matter how stupid it is.
Yeah.
You know, she knows that there's no reason why dump trucks should be there. But you see, the irony of it is that she's saying it's stupid because they're not allowed there, but they're still there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as if John is making that up. You know, they are there. And then the shot goes inside of the school again, very busy. Cobb is walking around. There's a bunch of cops running by him. You know, and he once again we get to see Charlie. And, we hear Charlie say, K-9, bring it around the back. Check out the boiler room. And Cobb interrupts him and goes, "Find anything, Charlie?" And he goes, "I spent a week in here with an X-ray machine and still not find it." "You don't have a week, Charlie. You got 5 more minutes, then we're moving up to 86th Street. Well, we're going as fast as we can." So it's a nice little shot, you know, like a 15-20 second shot, but it allows us to see the type of work that they're going into in order to try and, you know, find this bomb somewhere. Because again, nobody has any clue where it is.
It also keeps Charlie in play. He's a character that's introduced early on, being this guy that's like, you know, he's a little bit too excited about the bomb because of its clever construction and all that with the liquids and all that. But he's still like, you know, a serious police officer. So like seeing him here, I like that the movie's like, it's not forgetting about him because he's going to matter later on. So it's nice. It's like nice to get a quick check in with this character.
Right. Yeah. And he becomes, and this work that he's doing here is what he stands out with in the entire movie because of what happens in a later scene.
Yeah.
You know, showing his dedication to this type of work.
Yeah. I mean, there's a really compelling aspect of this movie is the stuff that doesn't involve John, Zeus, or Simon, which is the cops are working hard to make sure kids do not blow up an A-bomb. And,
yes,
you know, for a movie like this that, you know, it's as opposed to, you know, a skyscraper is under threat or an airport is under threat. This one, it's like, how do you threaten all of New York City? And the fact that you're able to find it by a bomb, that's not even real, but they create stakes out of that anyway, I do think works in the realm of you know, getting across the thrilling nature of a story like this. And it justifies why you have Graham Greene and Colin Camp, you know, all these, you know, skilled character actors playing these cops, because they end up making a difference by the time you have to deal with whether or not they might blow up in an instance. So it works out in the film's favor.
Right.
These are all reasons why this movie rules, by the way. That's a big part of it.
Exactly. But it also goes with the fact that the first time you see this movie, you honestly believe that there is a real bomb.
Yeah, you know,
there's
a bomb.
There's no reason not to believe it. You know, so they sell that so well.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And then Lambert stands next to Cobb and goes, "What's up?" He goes, "McLean was mentioning something about the Federal Reserve Building. Isn't that right near that Wall Street bomb site we just left?" He goes, "Yeah." So it's you'd think that Cobb would be a little smarter, given his rank and his you know, the stuff, his responsibilities and stuff like
that. You can't attribute that to intelligence. I am the guy that is the center of all of these phone calls, jurisdiction things, school stuff, bomb threats, this, that, the other. Also, I guess, you know, the drunk police cop has a hunch he's telling me about. Like, let me register that for a second. That's just being, you know, compounded with different ideas going through his head at one time.
Okay, but for him to say he mentioned something about the Federal Reserve Building, and then he says, "Isn't that right near where that bomb went off this morning?" You know, that's my point. You know, you'd think that he would know where the Federal Reserve was.
I mean, if you want to say this should have come to you easily, how many times have you been caught off guard by something that's very obvious, and then you're like, "Oh yeah, I'm an idiot. That should have been the thing to begin with."
Yes and no. I'm not you know, the head of the major crimes unit.
No, you're not the head of the major crimes unit. I'm saying if you could casually forget something that seems obvious because you had one or two things happening to you, this guy has 17,000 different things happening to him on a day where New York's been bombed twice. So, yeah, it might have escaped his mind that some place was located next to another place for a half a second.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that one, Aaron. I guess I have higher expectations for characters in movies. What can I say?
Yeah. I mean, he does think of it. It's not like he never thinks of it.
Right. That's true. And then the shot changes and we see an aerial view of Manhattan itself. And they basically zoom in a little bit and we get to see a whole bunch of dump trucks, you know, riding on the highway. And then we get a close-up shot of dump trucks riding on the highway. And we actually can now see that there are 6, even though before we only saw 5. Mm-hmm. the dump trucks going through. And then we get Targo on his walkie-talkie, and we hear, how long do you want us to stay here? He goes, the men at the stadium, stay or go. And, you know, Simon is very, very laid back at this point. You know, he's not overly concerned about everything. He knows his plan is going really well. And then, you know, he's on his cell phone, and he basically says, you know, I haven't heard from Carl in a while. Carl should have checked in by now. So he started trying to call, you know, on his cell phone. And I love the way they do this. You know, they intercut a shot of the dead bodies just lying inside of the elevator shaft, you know, with a phone ringing.
Yeah.
It's just so plastic.
It's a bit of a dark joke, but also just like, reminder, this is who we're talking about. it's very cut and dry that way.
That's right. But it's just great the way that they just do that, you know. Because we only see three of the bodies. We don't see all four bodies. We don't see Otto, because I guess they don't want to show us what his head looks like.
Because his head got blown off. Yeah, it's fine.
Yes. But if you look, there are blood splatters all over the other characters. So it's you know, Carl and Kurt both got shot in the stomach. So all the blood on their chests and stuff and their shirts come from either Gunther or Otto. You know, so it's no, I think it's a nice touch to give it to us like this. You know, we literally get, I think, like 2 seconds of watching them. But as you said, it's to remind us of what we just dealt with. You know, that's what it comes down with, down to here. And then it goes back to Simon, who's still waiting for them to answer the phone. And, you know, he's once again taking aspirin, like their little sugar pills or, you know, candies, stuff like that.
Those kind of inserts, I do wonder, because, like, we know the end of this movie was changed. And I do wonder, like, was the aspirin bottle... Is that the kind of stuff where, like, do we shoot inserts later to just make sure that we establish that Simon's taking aspirin throughout this movie so we can connect the dots later on? Or if it's like they always had them, it was a happy accident that they could, like, use that as a catalyst for the new third act that they had to create?
It's a great question. I don't recall the script having anything about aspirin.
Sure.
So it's very possible that it is something that was... added later on. I mean, we do have the part where John is taking aspirin at the beginning, but I don't believe that there's any other point where they talk about it. Now, I just did a quick search through the screenplay, and the word aspirin doesn't appear at all. So sure. This is basically something that they added in later on. It makes more sense that way. You know, and also even the dialogue here sounds like it's you know, 80 yard in, where we just hear him say moment and he goes, come on, come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, either 80 yard or just like, you know, the gist of the scene is very clear. Just, you know, express mild frustration at this thing. Jeremy Irons does whatever he does. And then even the aspirin itself, it's like that could just be a Jeremy Irons thing, or it's like this character, he has a stutter, has a certain way of thinking and talking, or maybe, you know, like maybe I have like a headache all day and I'll just like have aspirin on me or something. I don't know. Like, but
right. Okay. It's very possible. And then, you know, Simon takes the walkie talkie himself and he goes, stay where you are. Now Clayne may still turn up, which means that he's starting to get concerned. He realizes that something might've gone wrong, which, again, I think is great. That they're, you know, they show us again how intelligent Simon is. You know, he's not your typical, you know, he's a groover. I guess you can look at it that way.
He's also not underestimating McClane.
Yes,
He has elaborate plans for him, but he's also, you know, he has backups and he has ideas and he knows he might have to improvise if necessary.
Right. I mean, I love the fact that that he had this, that he set up all of these games for John to play.
If you want to talk about convenience, I mean, the fact that Zeus's nephews are in Chester A. Arthur Middle School, I mean, that's the one that's like, how do you plan that one? Like, that's,
you know, that just raises the stakes. You know, he knew that Alger Hodges would be there, so you know, you got to stop him before he gets more leverage.
Oh, in terms of reasoning behind plan, yes, it makes complete sense. In terms of, I have, as you're saying, he has so many elaborate plans. He was able to, on the day, plan the giant refrigerator that doesn't go unnoticed into a school to have that delivered to that exact school in the 21 out of 42 plan that he previously already established. And it happened to be the same one that his nephews were going to. That's 7th dimensional chess right there.
Yes. Well, isn't that what this movie is all about?
Yes, because he's a very smart guy, but not smart enough.
He's not. It goes back to the whole argument between, you know, John is the street smart guy as opposed to the book smart guy. You know, so, you know, the Grubers think that they can be book smart and outsmart somebody who is only street smart. You know, and neither of them can, which is why there are two dead Grubers at this point. At this point in time.
In the theatrical version of the movie, yes, he's not smart enough to outdo John because aspirin. In the other version of the movie, he is. Like, he does get away for a while.
Well, the script has an even different ending.
I know, there's a third ending. Yeah, it's another right. version. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't use the missile ending. which is also a little strange, but okay, whatever. We'll get there. All right. Do you have anything else you want to talk about in this minute?
No.
Okay. Anything else about the movie in general before we get into the script?
I mean, I'll just go back and say once again, Die Hard with a Vengeance is one of my favorite movies. I think it's one of the best action movies of the 90s. I think it's a top-tier McTiernan film. And, like, I've seen it so many times, and, like, Can I like more clearly see why the first Die Hard is better than this one now compared to when I was originally watching it? Like, sure. Like, Die Hard, I think, it's a more well-rounded story. It does what it needs to, where this film, I think, the first half is impeccable. And then, like, when you get into the heist aspect of it and more, it gets a little loose. But that's hardly hindering my enjoyment because Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson are just so great together. I think Jeremy Irons is having a lot of fun here. The action in this movie is pretty incredible. The car chasing stuff action is great. Like, the car driving through Central Park is just amazing and, like, feels like it's impossible. And yet they did it, and it's great. So I have a lot of admiration for Die Hard with a Vengeance.
All right, so the script has absolutely nothing from this minute.
Okay.
You know, just completely glosses over this whole part. I mean, we talked earlier in the week that there was a small scene in one of the schools. So maybe that could be, you know, what they were attempting to do at the time.
Once you get into this heist plot, I do think it like that, like the script, it's like now we have to like do so many things to connect all these dots to keep these characters in place. So yeah, the script's probably not going to reflect the same way, like once you're actually making that movie.
Right. Again, we have a lot of things that are different between the script and the movie. You know, this isn't on Plane, Trains, and Automobile level of the differences, but
sure.
You know, there's still, you know, as I mentioned in the past, Plane, Trains, and Automobiles has 2 hours and 12 minutes of the original cut out of it. You know, so, you know, it basically has Die Hard cut out of it, which I think is just really cool that fits in so well. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Name That Movie.
Okay.
Where the idea here is as Aaron, you and I have spoken over the past few days about, you know, this movie was originally called Simon Says. So, you know, most movies, if not just about every movie, has some other title that they were planning on using, or that they maybe used a fake title during production or something like that. So the idea behind this segment is I'm going to give you the name of the original name of a movie and the year it came out. and you have to try and guess what that movie is.
Okay.
All right. You do have lifelines. You can ask for the director. You can ask for an actor or another actor, you know, probably the whole thing. Got so it. Basically, I'm going to give you the name, the original title of the movie and the year. All right. So for the first one, the movie is The Prince of Salt from 2015.
That sounds familiar. The Prince of Salt, 2015. Okay, let's. What lifelines do I have?
A director, stars, you know, any of the actors.
Okay, give me a director.
Todd Haynes.
Todd Haynes. 2015.
Yep.
Prince of Salt, 2015. Todd Haynes. Which Todd Haynes movie is 2015? It's not Carol, is it?
Yes, it is.
It's Carol? Okay.
Yeah.
Prince of Salt. All right.
Yeah. That's the name of the original novel by Patricia Highsmith.
Okay. The Price of Salt.
Yeah. Oh, crap. You're right. The Price of Salt. Oops. You think that would have made it easier for you?
My mind would have went a different direction.
Oops. You see, that's what typos do.
Yeah.
I apologize for that.
That's fair. I still got it.
Yes. It's fine. That you did. There you go. All right. Let's go to the next one. And I will try to, hopefully there are no typos there. Yeah. From 1995. The movie's name is No Worries, I Was a Teenager.
95? No Worries, I Was a Teenager. 90, is it Clueless?
Yes, it is. Very good.
That was just a complete guess. I'm just thinking 90s teenager movies, right?
Okay, great.
They did right, better. Next... they had a better title.
I think so. Okay, the next one. From 2009, the original name of the movie was The Side of Truth.
The Side of Truth?
Yes.
What year?
2009.
2009, The Side of Truth. Side of Truth. It's like a legal drama or something. What's a director?
Matthew Robinson.
Mm-hmm. That did not help me.
I'll tell you this. He's a co-director. But if I were to tell you the other name of the director, he's also the star. So I didn't want to, you know, give that one away.
Co-director. So there's two directors.
Yes.
The Side of Truth. Is this an animated movie?
No.
It just has two directors. Matthew Robinson. Is he linked up with? For what movie needs two directors that and they're not brothers? Matthew Robinson.
And he is also the co-writer along with the other director.
Robinson. Matthew Robinson. The Side of Truth. Who's like the third build star?
Jonah Hill.
Okay. Side of Truth. Jonah Hill, Matthew Robinson. Side of Truth, Jonah Hill, 2009. How's this a co-directed movie? What would this be? Let's see, 2009.
It's a comedy.
I got that.
I'll even go further. It's a comedy fantasy.
Fantasy comedy, 2009, Jonah Hill. What's Jonah Hill doing in 2009? In a fantasy of some kind. Who's the second build actor?
Jennifer Garner.
Side. Oh. The Invention of Lying.
Excellent. Very good. Very good.
There it is. There That's right. Ricky Gervais co-directs that one. Okay.
That's right. Ricky Gervais co-directed, co-wrote, and he's the top billed actor in the movie.
Yeah.
Yes. You see, if I were to tell you Ricky Gervais from the start, that would have been.
I want to have a challenge.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, Matthew Robinson has actually written. He wrote Love and Monsters. Mm-hmm. He wrote three episodes of the TV series Black Box. This was actually The Invention of the Line was the first movie he ever wrote, and it's the only movie that he ever directed. So, and he has a small part in it, Person Number 4, which tells you a lot about him. All right, the next one from 2006. Okay, the name of the original title of the movie was Music High.
2006?
Yes.
Is it just High School Musical?
No.
Okay, 2006, Music High is the name?
Mm-hmm.
2006, Music High. Wait. Is it in fact a musical?
Not really.
Not really.
I mean, on IMDb, it's listed as a crime drama, but
crime.
But it's again, it's
okay. All right. Who is the third billed star of this movie?
Damain Radcliffe. I don't even know who that is.
Damain Radcliffe. Well, that's certainly a name that did not get me very far. What's the second billed person in this movie?
Jenna Dewan. Again, I don't know who that is either.
Oh, Step Up.
There you go. Excellent.
Crime drama. So, okay, yeah, it's not a musical. Music High, I get it. Jenna Dewan is the co-star of Step Up with Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum's former wife. They met on this movie, got married. Yeah. She used to be Jenna Dewan Tatum.
Okay, the synopsis on IMDb is Tyler receives the opportunity of a lifetime after vandalizing a performing arts school, gaining him the chance to earn a scholarship and dance with an up-and-coming dancer.
The credit I will give is that Channing Tatum is a white guy and they call it a crime drama. So it's like, all right, like at least that feels like an equal opportunity branding of crime drama, because vandalizing suddenly becomes crime drama. If it's a black guy, it's like, yeah, it's a dark thriller. But I'll give it some credit that they let it go to Channing Tatum and call it a crime drama. It's a dance drama, like minimal crime at best, but okay.
Exactly. All right, and the final one from 2010, The B Team.
From 2010?
Yes.
The B Team?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that same year the A Team comes out, I assume they weren't going to call the remake of the A Team the B Team. So I'll say The Losers?
No.
Okay, because that also came out in 2010 and it has basically the same plot as the A Team. The B Team, what is this? Is this a comedy?
This is an action comedy.
An action comedy. It's not The Losers, despite having the title of what The Losers is compared to the A Team. Action comedy 2010. Okay, who is the third billed person in this movie?
Surprisingly, Derek Jeter.
Derek, the other guys.
Okay, there you go.
That makes sense. Okay, I got that. Makes the B Team. Got it.
Yeah. Okay.
I like that he's third billed is hilarious. That's really funny.
I actually cheated. He's second billed, but third billed is Mark Wahlberg, according to IMDb. You have Will Ferrell, Derek Jeter, and Mark Wahlberg. I said, all right, I'm going to first give you Derek Jeter, but you see, you still got it, which is great.
I still nailed it. Yes, that was.
Yeah, you did really well on all of that, except for my faux pas by calling Carol the prince result instead of the prince.
I mean, again, I still got it.
Yes, you did.
I'm good with years. Years are very good for me with movies. We on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we do games every week, and Abe tries to, it'll be myself and a guest, and we'll switch off. So either I make the game or Abe makes the game. When Abe makes the game, he knows that I'm very good with this kind of stuff, so he has to find constantly new ways to challenge me when it comes to, like, fact-driven trivia.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
But that was fun. I like that. I like doing that. That's a fun exercise.
Yeah, I actually love this idea. Unfortunately, I won't be able to do it every season, but still, it's a fun exercise. I mean, I came up with 156 different movies that are on this list. So, mm-hmm. You know, and some of them, you know, some of them are the same movie over, you know, that had multiple titles and stuff like that.
Sure.
So yeah. All right. Excellent. So, Aaron, would you like to tell everyone for one final time this season where they can find you?
Yeah, I am on the podcast Out Now with Aaron and Abe. My friend Abe and I host that weekly show. We talk about movie releases and other fun stuff. I am the editor-in-chief at We Live Entertainment, where I write my movie reviews. I write Blu-ray and Criterion reviews over at whysoblue.com. Everything I do, including other podcast appearances or what have you, and other writings and stuff, can be found at my personal Substack page, thecodeofzeke.substack.com. And I am on all the social sites at Aaron's PS4.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Aaron, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun. Very entertaining.
Well, yeah. This is always a blast. I enjoy doing these. I like prepping for these and getting ready for it because I know you're going to like dive deep into certain things, and I try to guess which things you're going to dive deep into, and I'm usually wrong.
That's part of my fun by doing that.
But yeah, this is super fun. I'm very, very happy that you welcomed me on to talk about Die Hard with Vengeance, a movie that absolutely rules. So,
excellent. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest, but until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.